Welcome to the Success School podcast, and we're talking about the six characteristics every successful entrepreneur has. How are we feeling, Steph?
Excited. I love the topics that we are speaking about lately. I have really enjoyed talking about a little bit more of the softer skills in business.
100%. This is the cool stuff. This is fun to talk about rather than lecturing and teaching. Before we get into that, guys, I just want to thank you if you have followed the show lately. Our follower/subscriber count has boomed across all platforms. Our podcasting team at TBC Studios are really happy with us, actually.
Yeah, they are. They're really proud. And I think, are we still going to do that thing?
We are going to do the thing.
We're going to make sure that once we hit 1,000 listeners per episode, we're going to fly. We're going to run a competition and we're going to fly someone out to Perth, put you up in a fancy hotel and you can come hang out with us for a day and we can do business stuff, strategy stuff. We'll take you out. We'll wine and dine you. We'll have a really great time and we'll get your business absolutely crushing in 24 hours. And we're really excited for that.
Yeah, if you think 1,000 listeners doesn't sound like much until you're trying to do it, like getting a listener on a podcast is much harder than like a social media follower or like a, because they're very casual. Podcast follower is very intentional. So I'd say it's like worth like 5 or 10 to 1.
So could you guys please share the show? That would be really appreciated from us. Send it to a friend who needs it. Send an episode over. Like, please share it with your friends because the faster that we grow the listener base, the sooner that we get to run this competition and the sooner you get to win.
And come to Perth.
Let's go. Come to Perth and hang out with us.
The center of the world. Speaking of travel, so we're actually going to Fiji in August and we're going to be networking with some people doing some big shit in business, which is exciting. There's the old saying, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. So we don't want to be the smartest people in the room. So we're going to a room where people are doing $1 million a month. Think about that, $1 million a month with high profit percentages. And the reason that's so exciting is because once Steph and I witness it, we're going to be able to do it. Okay, we're very confident in that. So we just want to see it done. We want to ask some questions. We want to learn how they're doing said magic. And then we're going to learn the magic skills. And then we're going to be able to replicate them and teach them to you guys on this podcast as well. So we're big on getting in rooms with really fucking smart people and learning some shit from them and then replicating that for ourselves.
And so in this case, we have to fly to Fiji. And so I wanted to talk about on the back of that, because I did see that that was going to be Tim's personal update. The coolest part, okay, like obviously the coolest part is going to be hanging out with people who are earning $1 million a month. And some people are earning more than that as well, which is wild. So super excited to just understand how they do what they do, how it works, what happens in the back end, all of those things. The second thing that's really cool about it is that it's actually worked out to be about a $16,000 trip just for flights and accommodation. But we've only paid $2,500 because we have been point hacking. And everyone was talking about point hacking for like years. People have been talking about point hacking. And I've just been like, too hard, like not worth it, blah, blah, blah. But we have been like accumulating points for 1 year. And now it has just saved us like $14,000. And we're flying business and we're staying at this amazing five-star, incredible, fancy-ass resort. And we're doing it all for $2,500. So, guys, if you have not started point hacking, now, obviously, you spend a lot. Just to be really clear, like, we've accumulated points quite quickly, obviously, because we do have, you know, high outgoings than most, I'd say, startup or small businesses, of course. However, you would still accumulate points really quickly just by simply paying your tax bill off on points and things like that. So a lot of information around point hacking out there, guys. We have an Amex. That's one way that we accumulate points. Another way that we accumulate points is by paying for things through pay.com.au. So like, you know, if you purchase things through and put your payroll through and things like that through pay.com.au, you're able to earn points. Of course, to have an Amex, of course, use pay.com.au. There are going to be costs associated with that, but there's no way that I've spent $14,000 in fees or costs. So it definitely has a payoff to be able to fly later on down the track and accumulate points. There are actually lots of ways that you can accumulate points as well. Like paying off our tax bill alone accumulates so much of the points, which is crazy. And so for us, it's been really, really powerful and I'm super excited.
For sure. I'm pumped for Fiji. All right. So let's get into our lesson of the week. So I've discovered this amazing tool called Segmetrics. The reason I discovered said tool was because our marketing manager came into the business the other month and she said, can you get me all this crazy data? So we track about 40 KPIs per week, but she wanted more data than that. So I had to find a tool to import our Go High Level, which is our CRM, Stripe, Thrivecart, ads, all into one. And then we wanted to see all this crazy data, like how long it took for someone to become a client once they hit our lists, which of our lead magnets were converting better, which of our marketing funnels were converting, all this like in-depth, intense data. Because like Steph and I, you know, we love business, but we're not that into the data. We're more about like doing, and then we're going to get a result for doing. But she's more of the analytical type. She wants to know what of the doing that we're doing is getting the result, which is great because we're not super analytical people. We're more of like really just great executors, and we just do a good job with coaching and executing tasks. So it's cool to get her perspective on it. But the other things you can get from it is how much is the value per lead, which advertising is working, and which of our lead magnets has been converting to clients. Therefore, we have the data from that. We can make informed decisions, and we know where to spend our budget from there.
Question on this. This is obviously like we're a multi seven figure business now. Mm. And so like this makes sense for us.
Mm-hmm.
At what point would this make sense for another, like anyone?
If you're using paid ads, I would think it makes sense. If you're using Grow High Level and Stripe, I think it makes sense. So like 200, 300K a year. I think we probably should have used this a little bit sooner. If I would think about how much money we've wasted over the last couple of years.
The thing that has blown my mind with it has been just like Tim said, we have already been measuring like 40 metrics a week. Like we have really, really, really thorough KPI reports, and there was still so much that we weren't measuring. And so for us, like, you know, knowing how long it takes from somebody, you know, to basically like download one of our things to becoming a client really allows us to know, you know, what kind of time frame it's going to take for us to convert somebody, what that nurture sequence looks like. Then we can start, you know, increasing our nurture activities, and then we can see, does that change or impact whether somebody becomes a client sooner or later? Obviously, all of the stuff that we learn from this, we get to teach our clients, which is so sick as well. We have a lot of nurture tactics that we already teach our clients.
Sick, man.
Sick. It's fucking so sick, gnarly. And so, showing my age, maybe. Yeah. No, but it's really cool. And so, yeah, maybe if you're $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year, you're running ads, definitely something to look into is, yeah, sex metric.
Sick. Sex metrics. Something on Steph's mind today.
I said today. What's it called?
Segmetrics.
Segmetrics. Looking for some hot stuff, baby, this evening. I just got Tim so hot under the collar, he had to turn the aircon on.
Damn, it's hot.
So, my lesson of the week. This might seem really obvious, but I think it's a conversation that's worth having because for some of you, it's going to be obvious. For others of you, it's going to be a really nice reminder. For some of you, it might be a really new thought, but there are going to be risks in running a business. I'm going to be very, very clear. You have to be a little bit on the non-risk averse side to run a business, okay? So we had a client the other day who was basically saying like she wanted to quit her job, but she couldn't because she didn't have enough money coming in the business. But she couldn't earn any more money in the business because she couldn't take on any more clients because she had the job. And so she was in this kind of like loop where she couldn't take on any more clients because she was working. And she's kind of charging at the top end of what she could be charging for right now and for the amount of marketing and stuff that she can be doing, the amount of audience building that she's doing right now. And so the only way for her to know whether or not her business can fund her life and pay her mortgage is actually to do it. There's really nothing else. And all of us, every single one of us has gone through this phase. And it is a lot easier when you do it young, like Tim did it, where there's, you know, you're living at home and there's not a lot riding on it. And, you know, it's okay if you don't eat for a week and eat Maggi noodles. But yeah, when you're a mum and you have a mortgage and it like, it's definitely a lot more risky. But every single person has to make this jump. And every single person doesn't know if it's going to work until it works. Okay. And so when I quit my day job, I had a mortgage and it was not an easy decision to take away, especially when you have money mindset like I did, to take away that safety of that income and jump in. But I also knew that I was capped. I knew that I had earned this X amount of money. I could earn, you know, let's say $3,000 a month or $2,000 a month with the amount of time I had. But imagine if I 3X the amount of time I had, then surely I could 3X my income. That was my thought process on it. Every single person in business has to make that jump because you are strapped for time when you're in a day job. So you cannot fully understand how much potential there is in your business until you actually give it the time. And so I just wanted to be really clear about that for anybody who's sitting on the fence, like there is a risk. And I think the way to make that decision is a couple of things. One, always have a bit of a safety net behind you in terms of, you know, finances. Obviously, you don't want to have to not be able to pay your mortgage. Two, just know that you can get a job anytime, anywhere, all the time. Like if you're skilled, you'll get another job. Like even if it's at a local coffee shop, even if it's at Coles or Woolworths, even if it's doing some gardening on a weekend using Airtasker, even if you have to drive a few Ubers here and there, like you will be able to make money. There are endless ways to make money. And so it's just about going, okay, I will give this a test for a period of time. I'll see if I can make it work. And if not, then I'll go and apply for another job until I get my skills up, until I figure out how to do it.
Figuring out how to do it, guys. We are just figuring out YouTube at the moment. So hit that subscribe button if you're watching on YouTube. Let's get into the topic. Steph, do you want to bring this in for us?
Would love to. So We've been thinking about, you know, and talking about a lot around, like, what does every single successful entrepreneur have that is the key to them having the success that they have? And so we kind of figured out that there were six characteristics that every successful entrepreneur that we've ever met has. And we can tell kind of within hanging out with somebody whether they'll take their business the whole way. It was a conversation that we have. We usually tell within 20 or 30 minutes of meeting somebody if they have what it takes. And it's because they will demonstrate some of these characteristics. And so we're going to dive into those six characteristics now.
All right, guys, the first one is they don't seek permission, okay? So they're okay with trial and error. They use their initiative. They're able to listen to their gut. They don't believe in a right and wrong answer. They're just going to see how it works out, okay? Where you see this all the time in coaching is someone will upload something and they'll be like, hey, can you check this over, you know, aka seeking permission before they'll go and post it. The problem with if you're always seeking permission or you're always seeking the okay or the thumbs up from a coach, partner, relative, whatever it is, you're going to be severely handicapped because business is all about taking action fast, okay? You learn from taking action, therefore you gain feedback, therefore you get better and make better decisions over time because you're going to learn what works. So if you upload something to a portal or you wait 48 hours for someone to get back to you to give you the okay, it just slows down your time to action, okay? You need to back yourself in, and if you make the wrong decision, eventually you're going to make less of the wrong decisions because you're going to learn from it. But if you never give yourself that opportunity to make the wrong decision and gain feedback from the decision, you're not going to get better at it, okay? Entrepreneurship is about making the wrong decision and then learning from it over and over.
Think about every CEO you've ever seen online, in movies, you know, wherever. They're not asking for permission to do things in their business. They're just taking radical action because they trust themselves to figure it out no matter what.
Steph, why do you see so many startups seeking permission?
I think in the startup phase, I think that, well, actually, there's a lot to this. I think if you look at spiral dynamics and NLP levels, I think that when you are breaking out of a corporate world or a day job or, you know, the system that has been designed for us in terms of like working, it's very much permission based. Like when you're at school, you even have to ask permission to go to the toilet. When you go to work, you have to ask for permission to take time off and you want to get it right, otherwise you get fired. And so there's this real like right or wrong mindset that comes from working in day jobs. And it's quite hard when you step into entrepreneurship because there really is no right or wrong. And failure is actually a really incredible gift that you are given. But most people who are transitioning from corporate day job into business or have been in business not that long, they will think that failure is bad and that failure is going to cause them to effectively, that the response in their body will be like, you know, if you fail a test or if you, you know, make a mistake at work, something's at risk, right? Whereas in entrepreneurship, if you fail, if you make a mistake, like it's the best thing you can ever do because you're going to learn from it much, much faster. And so I think a lot of people seek permission because they don't want to get it wrong. But in entrepreneurship, there is no wrong. There's only lessons. And so if you can make that transition in your mind to, okay, nothing's going to fail. Like you cannot fail in a business from one thing. Like it's just not possible unless you continue to do that one thing over and over and over again. And you keep getting the failure and you keep just repeating the failure over and over again. Eventually your business will fail, of course. But even then, like we've spoken about this before, like one of my favorite examples of this is the guy from Wolf of Wall Street, what's his name?
Jordan Belfort.
You know, like the dude failed in a really massive...
Went to jail.
Like failed so badly that he went to jail and still came out of jail and is still like a super wealthy, super incredible...
It's worth like $500 million
so
or something
much
now.
Money. Yeah. There's not even a failure there because it's just like, okay, well, like let's just not do shit illegal next time and let's just do it like legit the time after that. And then, you know, we're going to be making money. Entrepreneurship, failure is the key. Like failure is the key. So stop trying to avoid the failure and instead just like step into it. Point number two, we find that all entrepreneurs that we have met that have been wildly successful, they work on their mindset. And I want to be really clear, mindset is not affirmations. They don't look in the mirror every morning and tell themselves how great they are. That definitely works. Mm. But there's so much more to it than that. I think when we tell our clients that they need to work with a mindset coach, which we often will tell our clients, if we're bumping up against the same thing over and over and over and over and over again with a client, we're giving them the strategy and they're not implementing the strategy over and over and over again, eventually we'll be like, okay, I think this is actually a mindset block and not actually a strategic block, right? And so we will often tell our clients to go and work with a mindset coach. But the reason that you would work with a mindset coach is not necessarily to work on the things that you are aware that you have a problem with, but it's actually to see the things you can't currently see. So the thing that is going to be holding you back the most is going to be in your blind spot. You're not even going to be aware that you are doing it. And I think the most profound thing for us with mindset coaches is that we've had so many realizations about stuff that we just weren't aware of. And it was just like we were constantly hitting the same ceiling over and over again until we brought awareness to it. And then we could change the behavior and the pattern.
Yeah, I see this happen all the time. And the way it becomes apparent to me is they say things like, oh, that doesn't feel right for me. Okay. And I'm like, cool. So what does feel right for you? And they can't even give me an answer because they're so trapped in their own thoughts, beliefs, actions about what they think is right and wrong. So if you like, look at the example here, if someone said to me, go and outreach 100 people a day, or go spend $100 on ads, go make 10 pieces of content, go reach out to 10X clients, I would have no problem doing any of that. Okay. And that's because I have no mindset shit around taking any of that action. 5 years ago, 100%, I would have been like, oh, all my ex-clients hate me, or I'm not going to spend $100 a day on ads because that's not going to work for me, or I'm not going to outreach 10 people because what if they say no? That's all mindset stuff. So if I'm saying any of that stuff to you right now and you're thinking, oh, that's me, you've got some mindset shit, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be stopping your success. Steph and I say this stuff to people all the time in Success School, and they come back with these, you know, bullshit excuses on why they can't take action, and then they wonder why they're not successful.
People who work as hard on their mindset as they do on their business and put equal amounts of work in and effort in to switching up those belief systems are going to be equally as, if not more so, successful than somebody else.
All right, guys. Point three here, guys, is they do the work. Okay. So they're usually finding themselves implementing what they're learning. They're taking messy action. They don't need things to be perfect. They are showing up for their business and their clients consistently. They're getting on live trainings. They're doing upskilling. They're doing the work. They're showing up to calls. They're getting into rooms with the right people, and they don't make excuses on getting the work done. So I was scrolling Instagram this morning, and there's a girl that Steph and I both follow, and her name's Steph. And she said one of her clients got back to her and said it didn't work. And she said, what didn't work? And then she said, the stuff that you're giving me doesn't work. And then she said back to her, are you posting multiple pieces of content a day? Are you outreaching people? Are you making offers every day? Are you sending emails every day? Are you doing all those things every day? Because if you're doing those things every single day, there is no way that you're not going to be successful. And I think a lot of the failures that we see, or, you know, quote unquote failures, is people are just not doing the work and they're not taking enough action in business.
And I think the thing that I learned from you, actually, that you've been phenomenal at, and I see other people who are like you do, is that they implement while they learn. I think that's so fast. Like, if we're at a business retreat and someone's just taught Tim something, he's literally doing it while they're teaching it. Like, he's literally got the apps open. He's taking the notes. He's making it happen there and then. We see the same thing happen with some of our clients on group coaching calls. Like, there'll be some people who are like, yeah, I just finished that thing that you told me to do now, like, while they're on the call still. Mm. And so the faster, like, speed is so much of what business is about. The sooner that you can get out of your head and just take some action, the faster that you get into the habit of taking more action, the faster your business will grow. Point number four, guys, successful people, one of the other traits is that they're not looking for a quick fix. So the entrepreneurs who have the most success, they know that a silver bullet doesn't actually exist. There's no one strategy. There's no one tactic that you're just around the corner from that's, you know, going to crash and that's going to make your business like blow up and have all this amazing success. They're not trying every single hack under the sun. They're not changing direction every single month. They pick a strategy that they think will work and they stay focused. And it's interesting because when I actually say that, I had a thought the other day and I thought the strategy that works is the one that you stick to. Yeah. And I think I really believe that. Like, all strategies work, but the one that you stick to has the highest chance of working. But if you keep starting again with a new hack, a new strategy, a new direction, then you're starting from ground zero every single time.
I want to give an analogy here or an example of this. Imagine you are pushing a 100-kilo boulder up Mount Everest. And then every kilometer, you're just changing direction. It's like basically letting go of the ball and letting it roll down the bottom. You're never going to reach the summit if you always are restarting. And what happens with this is if people restart when they take 2 weeks off, they're not feeling like it. They just don't want to post content for a week. They don't want to send that email. They don't want to show up to that client call. They lose momentum and the ball just rolls back to the bottom of the hill every time. And when you look for a quick fix, or you see a shiny object, or you change direction, or you become a mindset coach, a business coach, you become a philanthropist, or you become a massage therapist, and this is all the same person, by the way, you just lose momentum every single time. The reason I got so far in the fitness industry is because I kept pushing that fucking boulder up the hill for 12 years or 13 years. And eventually you get closer and closer to the top and things get easier and easier. And then eventually one day you're going to get to the top of the hill. And then when you push the boulder down the hill, it's very easy to do. And this is what happens when you create momentum in business. Mm-hmm. But if you cut your momentum out all the time, you're never really going to reach momentum and you're never going to really reach success.
And I think part of the most powerful part of that, the reason that they're not always looking for the quick fix, is because they're genuinely passionate about what they do and they find reward in the day-to-day. Like Tim, fitness is one of the hardest industries in the world to work in, you know, in terms of like literally the hours, the pay. It's highly flooded. There's a low barrier to entry. People don't really want to do fitness either. It's a hard sell. And so one of the things that has made it so rewarding for Tim year on year, month on month, day on day, is the fact that he just loves it. Like he literally loves it. He's passionate about it. And so there's always reward in the day to day. And when there's reward in the day to day, pushing that boulder up that hill becomes just that little bit easier because you actually don't hate it as much as you enjoy it. You enjoy it more than you hate it. Point number five here is that they're patient, but they're also hungry. And so while successful entrepreneurs, of course, they want the wins. We want the wins. We want the Lambos. We want the houses. We want the holiday house in Lombok. That's the current ideal. You know, we want all the things, right? But they understand that it takes time. And they're not in business for 3 months and then get pissed because they haven't made 30K a month yet. Like, why am I not there yet? You know, they're willing to put in the work. They're willing to do what's necessary. And they understand that it may take 12, 18 months, 5 years before they start to see meaningful results. They understand that business is a marathon and not a sprint. And I think one thing that we see in entrepreneurship all the time is everybody's always going for the quick win. Mm. But the problem is that when you hit a quick win, it doesn't last, okay? Because if we hit a quick win, usually it's because of something's gone viral or whatever has happened, or like, you know, you've sold a product that wasn't scalable or whatever it is. It's like, okay, but if you just take the time to build it sustainably and really get those foundations laid out well, you're going to build and be able to carry that momentum and continue to scale and grow year on year, month on month, forever, rather than just having those quick wins initially. And then usually what we see is that things go backwards.
I want to give an analogy and a story of the quick wins, and I know this whole podcast episode's been stories.
I've enjoyed it,
but you know, the example here is we've had a marketer that's given us some advice in the past, and they've said that our ad strategy might not be the most effective strategy. And you know, our ad strategy is we spend a lot of money generating leads from lead magnets, providing value, and then we nurture them on our email list. Over time, it's worked well for us. It's helped us build a multi seven-figure business. And they said, why don't you just go for the more direct route and get someone to book in on an application form, which is going to cost you probably 10 times the amount. And you're going to get more calls booked, but you're going to get less email addresses and less nurture over the long term. So that would be an example of going for a short-term versus a long-term strategy. Our current strategy is very long-term. We're all about nurturing, getting people to listen to our podcast, watch our YouTube, giving them free lead magnets, getting them in our Facebook group, nurturing them online versus getting them on a call straight away when they have no like and trust. One of these options is going to work far better for the long term, and the other one's going to work well for short term, but you're going to burn people out very quickly. And what happens is if you get a lot of people on a sales call who are very unqualified and have no real know, like, and trust of you, it's going to be very hard to close the deal. Okay. And closing the deal, you know, over the long term is far better and far easier when people have no like and trust on you. So I want you guys to ask yourself right now, are you playing the long game in your business or are you playing the short game and going for short, quick wins? You can get short, quick wins, but the juice and the money is made in the long game. All right, guys, point number six is they look after their personal life. Okay. So they look after their health, their mental well-being. They nurture their relationships. So that's friendships, wife, partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, friends, whatever it is. They surround themselves with people who believe in them. They get help when they need it. And then lastly, guys, if their home life is mayhem, their business will be mayhem. Steph and I have spoken about this for the last couple of months, and we're firm believers in having your home base sorted to be successful. We know a ton of people who don't have their home base sorted and their business ends up being chaotic for that reason. I think like when I got married, and I'm not saying you have to do this, and I know not everyone is in that position to do that, but business got a lot better because my shit was dialed at home. I didn't have to worry about my girlfriend. I didn't have to worry about my wife. Yes, I do put effort and time into those things, but I know shit is sorted at home. Therefore, I can put a ton of energy into growing my business.
Yeah. And on the flip side, like, if you're having marriage issues, if your relationship is on the rocks, if any of those things are going on, like, we highly recommend working on that first, because throwing a business, like, business is, it's a lot, guys. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know it's a lot. And so, you know, trying to do that while also nurturing and fixing and working on, you know, a rocky relationship, it's really distracting. You're probably not going to do either thing very well. And so really, like, highly recommend getting your home base as sorted as possible and just making sure, like, if you're really going to take your business, like, if you're doing a side hustle, it's probably not that big a deal. But if you're planning on taking this to 6 or 7 figures, like, your home base, your daily routines, your support systems, they need to be really good, because this is really hard to do on your own.
I just have one more point on that, guys. And I know in this time and this age and social media and what's going on the internet, there's a real sense of the grass is greener on the other side. And people are just willing to throw in relationships and marriages and home because they think there's something better out there, which is perpetuated on the internet via social media, which, you know, I can totally see. And I understand that some relationships are shit and whatever, but the grass is greener where you water it. The grass is not greener on the other side. So if you're in this position, and we know a lot of people that are in this position, if you want a better relationship or you want a better partner or whatever it is, you need to work at that. And I said that again, you need to work at that. Okay. Not them. It's a joint thing that needs to be worked on together. All right, let's go into our listener questions. I have one for Steph, so I'm going to get her to answer this first because I just read this as this come up and I'm completely unprepared for this. But listener question is from Heidi Anderson. Thanks, Heidi. If you could change one thing about each other, what would it be, Steph?
I feel uncomfortable. I felt uncomfortable when she asked this. The question was actually, if you could change one thing about Tim, what would you change? And yeah. I was like, interesting question, because it was on my Instagram stories. Interesting question. Literally nothing. I wouldn't change a single thing about Tim. I love every single one of his strengths, and I appreciate and adore all of his weaknesses as well. Actually, there's very few of them, to be completely honest, but the things he's not so good at. And the reason I love even his weaknesses is because they're his biggest opportunities for strength and growth. And I know that he always is finding ways to identify his weaknesses and work on them. There's never a time where he just sits around thinking he's bloody perfect. It doesn't need to change. Like, he will go into mindset coaching sessions even when he doesn't feel like he needs them, and he'll come out a completely different person on the other side with more awareness and more conscious awareness around, you know, what is going on for him right now and what he needs to work on. And I'd say every single week and every single month, Tim is just getting better and better and better as an entrepreneur, as a man, as a husband. So as lame as this might sound, I would change literally nothing about Tim. I think that, you know, no one is perfect, but I pretty much tell Tim every day that he's perfect. I think that Tim is probably the perfect husband and man.
Thank you. I don't know where to go from that.
So I'm terrified because I don't know if he's going to say the same thing back.
The only thing I would want you to change is just not worrying about me so much. So worry about me worrying about you.
Yeah, I do.
And it can be quite unhelpful because I'm like, if I need something, I'll just tell you. And if I don't want you to do something, I'll just tell you. There's no, like, Steph and I don't have a relationship where we, like, hold shit back from each other, you know? Mm-hmm. If there's a problem, I address it immediately, like, in that minute.
Just to give you some context, guys, on why this has even come up as a conversation is because in the last kind of 5 months, we've made the decision that Tim would take the lead on most of the strategic business decisions, and I would stick to my areas of genius, which are coaching, marketing, personal brand building, and anything that's within really that realm. And so when Tim has taken the control, it's actually left me with not that much to do, which has been really interesting. And what it's meant is that I often will feel guilty. And this is just something that we're living in real time right now. So just to be really honest with you, it's something that I feel quite guilty about. It's like, oh, Tim will be working and I'll kind of be like, well, I guess I'll go lay in the sun and read my book. And I feel almost bad about it. And I feel like, oh, I should be doing more. And Tim would expect me to do more. And, you know, Tim needs me to do more. And I kind of create these stories in my head, which are untrue. And then I start to worry about all the things that I should be doing and how let down Tim's going to feel. And then I put all this, like, unrealistic, that I get into a mood. And then, you know, Tim's like,
I get into a mood.
Then Tim's like, because I'm in a mood. And he's like, what do you want? I'm like, you're putting so much pressure on me. And he's doing nothing. It's pressure that I've created. And so this is really interesting thing that comes through when you do work with your husband and when you do let the masculine take the lead sometimes. And so it's been a really new thing for me.
Yeah, I'm not one to hold my opinion back. So if I'm not saying anything, it's generally because there's nothing up.
Yeah.
So I would appreciate that.
No worries. Thanks, Hyde, for the marriage counseling session. Appreciate that.
All right, guys, that was a great episode again. If you got some value from it, we only ask one thing, and that is to subscribe or follow the show. So if you're on Spotify, Apple, wherever you're at, YouTube, hit the subscribe, hit the follow button. We do appreciate all the support. Also, any text messages around how fucking good the podcast was, strongly appreciated as
well.
And
if you're watching on YouTube, tell us how good the setup is, because we have been working on this. We spent a lot of money on this. We would love your feedback on it.
It's getting better and better every single time. Thanks, guys.
See you later.